It's going well. We enjoy it. We're learning lots and we're
good.
Yeah, that's a name from my past.
Davis?
Yeah, I was on staff at Northview.
Oh.
With Dave?
Okay.
No, Dave had left.
Before I left, but we were on staff together. There.
Yeah, when I was at Northwest, you were still on staff there.
Yeah, when were you on staff there?
In school.
I mean, when were you, at Northwest? What years?
I graduated in...
The screen has to be tilted, so...
Well, I graduated in 01, but that was the year after it shut down, so...
Yeah.
3 years before that, so 97 through 2000.
Okay, I came on staff at Northview...
This one over here is the group chat.
Okay,
you have to log on.
96? And I stayed at Northwest part-time. And also Trinity and Acts, and I was kind of doing several things at one time. And that.
What was your role at
Northview? Area. Well, I changed the name, or we, from Family Ministries to Home Ministries. So I was only 0.6. So my area was in the area of mentoring, marriage, and in the area of parenting. In those areas. Those are my two areas. So I developed a whole mentoring ministry for, like, in the area of marriage, there were three areas that we developed, preparing for, enriching, and intervention. So the three dynamics. And I developed premarital, we developed a mentoring ministry. We didn't do the seminar stuff. I developed mentors, mentoring couples, and they would have between two or three couples at one time together that they would walk through. And we used, the curriculum we used to guide them was Norm Wright's material, Before You Say I Do. And so the mentoring couple, it was quite... It kept growing as far as how we developed it. And I got it to the point where it was policy that you had to go through this to be mentored by a pastor at Northview. And so we had it at a point where you signed, there's three or four entrance points in a year where as a couple you engaged, enter in, we have mentoring couples ready, you would go with one or two other mentoring couples with a mentorees, I should say. And so you would go through the process of meeting, and you set your agenda, your timetable as a small group. And the mentoring couple had to be able to sign a certificate of endorsement, and if they wouldn't, we wouldn't do the wedding. I mean, we kept tightening the process. And we we probably were doing about close to 50 couples a year. So, and the deal was that you signed up, you got attached with a mentoring couple and this group. You went through about 3 months, depending, going through Before I Say I Do, before, and then from that you had to agree to meet with your mentoring couple for 18 months after. And research showed, I can't find the research, but Ann Jones was one of our pastors at the time in women's ministries, had gone to a seminar, and it showed that if you were mentored 18 months after, not 12 doesn't do it, 18 months after, consistently with a mentoring couple, that the likelihood of success increases. Wow, it's going to be a small group, guys. So we really developed that quite extensively. And
do they still do that?
Doubt it. I'm not aware. And that it was so rich. I really enjoyed that part of that ministry, and that it was all built around relationship. I mean, you had couples who were mentoring couples who had to have been married for 10 years. We did a background check on them from people that would
knew them and endorsed them, sort of stuff, so they, you know, do it. And really, in the training, it was like, for these couples who had healthy marriages, just relax and be yourself and walk through this with them, because you really understand marriage more about it than you realize,
right,
and that sort of stuff. And their marriages, yeah, actually got stronger just because of that. So,
anyways, that's kind of what we did.
I think we need to get started because we have to stop at noon.
And welcome to this time together. We're going to look at the area of developing small group leaders. And just a couple things about myself. My name's Curtis Congo, as you can see on the screen. I wear a few hats. One of the hats I wear is I teach here at on this campus on a part-time basis. I've been part of the ACTS faculty. I do a little bit of teaching in the area of leadership development, but more of my energy is more in the area of teaching communications for the university. And so I'm teaching a public speaking course on Monday nights right now. I do it part-time. Another hat that I wear is I'm in pastoral ministry. I'm a transitional pastor, and I'm completing my 10th year of doing that. Right now I'm at Brookswood Baptist Church, which is about 3 miles south of here, and I'm in my 6th church, and in some cases I'm at churches for just over 2 years, and in some cases about a year. And another hat that I wear, almost kind of a volunteer, it's kind of a little side thing that I really enjoy, is area of research. And so I've done research, and I enjoy especially research in the area of the world of a pastor. So my doctoral dissertation was in the area of job dissatisfaction in ministry of associate pastors, and did that out of Oregon State University. And more recently, I did some research for the North American Baptists in regard to perceived and real pressures experienced by the pastor. So I did that and went to their annual their BC pastors retreat and presented it, and they all loved it. What they loved was it was Canadian. But I said, it's you, because it was on you, okay? And then somebody made the remark, boy, it'd be great to hear what our spouses think. So they turned around and said, hey, could you do the same research asking our spouses how they perceive what we perceive to be our stress and pressures? So I did that the next year, and had a great time making that presentation. I enjoy that part of research, and so in a sense, this is going to have a flavor of research built into it, and it's done purposely. I am going to present to you, actually, when I did my doctoral degree at Oregon State University, I was trained in research design. I mean, there is a scientific method that you should follow, and I'm following that somewhat as we look at the area of leadership development. I want to talk about today with you, I want to talk about a research project, an experiment that I was involved in when I was in a church in Vancouver, Washington. And I want to walk through it. It was one of the more revolutionary moments of my life as I experienced this. And so I've entitled it, as you can see, An Experiment in Developing Small Group Leaders, A Reflective Qualitative Study. And we're going to look back at, I'm looking back at and analyzing what happened. So I'm going to walk through it with you. And, you know, at the end, I'm going to give some time for questions and et cetera. And hopefully this will be valued. It's a little bit different approach, but I want to walk through the parts. So I'm going to talk about the introduction, what you would do in research. There's 5 chapters that you usually do in research. You do an introduction, as you can follow. Then you do a review of literature, but I'm going to call it thought review. Then the design of the experiment, I'm going to explain what we did. And then this is where the writing happens for you. It's the report of the findings, and then conclusions, implications to the area of small group leadership. So,
And if you just follow along, most of the writing is done until we get to the results, etc.
So I want to walk through this experiment that we had. Associate pastor and I
wanted to experiment with leadership development, trying to follow as close as we could within reason what Jesus did. And a book on a personal level that really revolutionized my thinking. It's an old book.
Okay, I mean, it's old.
It's called The Master Plan of Evangelism by Robert Coleman. I mean, I think it was written in the early 60s. But the master is Jesus. So basically saying this is what his plan was for evangelism. And as I was reading through the book, it struck me that really this is the master plan of leadership development. That really is what this is about. And in some ways, I think he partially gave the wrong title.
But that's a personal opinion. I'm not the writer of the book, so I probably don't have too much right to make any more comments than that.
And so an associate pastor over adult ministries, I was the pastor of ministry development, and I went on this journey, this experiment together to see what would happen. And that's what I want to walk through with you is this journey using the scientific method.
And if you can just follow along with the handout, you'll be able to see where I'm going.
In the scientific method, the first thing you have to deal with is the statement of the problem, and then to really kind of talk about what the purpose of the experiment is. And you have it written for you there.
The statement of the problem, two parts. Leadership development is not instant.
Today, we live in more of an instant world. Communication is so instant, and it's so changing our world. My mother-in-law, the night before she passed away last week, the night before she passed away, we did not know this was going to happen. We were talking about the Olympics, and Canada was going to be playing a game the next day, and she could not understand the 12-hour difference. Like 9 o'clock in the morning here was 9 o'clock at night there and vice versa. And so she couldn't get that in her mind. So she was thinking, they're actually playing the game right now and they're not letting us know. And then they're going to show us the game 12 hours from now. And I kept saying, no, you don't understand. You could never do that in communication today. Everybody knows instantly.
Well, in those areas, I get it. But with leadership development, it can't be instant. We became convinced of that. It's not strictly an academic classroom approach.
So let's gather our potential leaders together, and I'm going to tell you about small groups, and then you're going to go up, have a small group, and you're going to do a good job. Okay, so
we became convinced it's not that. Thirdly, that it is not something to be ignored due to busyness. And that happens in churches. I'm not saying in your church. It does happen, where
you just said, yes, you're a warm body, you're locked in for the next 10 years as a small group leader. We're going to put you in a room, we're going to lock the door, and you're not coming out until we say you can come out, which probably is never, sort of thing.
It's not that, and Jesus never approached it that way. But leadership development is, it's an investment. It's an investment of time, and it's an investment of emotion.
Jesus did it.
3+ years, and he had successes and he had failures in his experience as he invested. It's about modeling. It's about actually observing. If any of you have been mentored, or you probably have somebody that's a mentor to you, even if they don't know they're a mentor to you, but they've rubbed off on you.
Certainly my parents were for me. I'm sure you've had some. And I've had mentors in ministry.
And I believe that modeling is one of the critical factors necessary in regard to building
a healthy leader. It's also relational. It's not just modeling from a distance, but it's actually being up close. It's getting to know.
And all of us know that we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and we're scared everybody's going to understand what our weaknesses are. And so when you build a relationship, you get to know the whole person. My wife knows more about me than anybody else in this world. Why? We have a healthy marital relationship. So we've gotten to know each other. And so the statement of the problem is what it is not and what it is. In regard to further in the introduction to this experiment, the purpose of the experiment we had were twofold, as we put it. One is to test the master plan of evangelism, and as we called it, the leadership development, master plan of leadership development. We're going to test this. Does it work to the extent we can apply the principles and see what happens? And secondly, to develop a competent, confident small group leaders. And that, I believe, happens again when you invest, you model, and you build a relationship with them. So that's the introduction to this experiment as I reflect back. Thought review. There are people who have said important things about the whole area of small group ministry. Jesus, and I just raised a couple of them, in Matthew 4, verse 19, he's now bringing on his leadership team, and he says, you, come follow me. Come follow me. And later he's meeting with his team, and he makes a very astounding statement. He's asked the disciples, who do the people say that I am? And they give the names of different people. And who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Son of God. And Jesus turns to him and says, blessed are you. And that did not come from you, but from God. And then he makes this statement, I will build my church. So in the regard to having small groups, what's critical to understand is it's Jesus doing the building, of building his church. He's building small groups, and we're called to be intentional like that, building in the life of leaders. Robert Coleman, as I already mentioned, in this book, talks about looking, he analyzes the ministry of leadership development that Jesus did, and he comes up with those eight principles that you have written there. He selected the issue of selection. He selected. Secondly, association. He spent time with them. Consecration. He set them apart. Impartation. He poured himself into his disciples. Demonstration. He actually did it, and they observed it happening. Delegation. He gave them responsibility to move forward. Supervision. He oversaw what they're doing. And reproduction. He expected them to reproduce, to make a difference. Jamie McDonald, who was the past national director of the Baptist General Conference of Canada, and I was in a seminar with him last weekend. And have you ever gone to a seminar and you get one good thing out of the day? And I don't mean he didn't have good things to say, but I grabbed the hold of this. He said that less than 5% of churches in Canada, or less than 5% of church people, ever experienced specific leadership training for any ministry at all. And that includes just doing a seminar. That's not talking about going to this level that I'm suggesting. On a personal level, this is on thought review, yes. I should mention Jethro first. Exodus chapter 18, I really don't need to go into that passage. You know it quite well. Moses is doing all the judging, and his father-in-law comes and says, you're not doing a good thing. And basically, if you read the text, you begin to realize that one of the things Moses is doing is also teaching and developing, and he's saying, hey, you got to turn over the responsibility to other people. You expand and multiply your effectiveness. On a personal level, I have been mentored, and there are some key people that have made a difference in my life, and I still refer back to them. One is a man named Doug Johnson, lives in Abbotsford. I interned with him for 2 years, and I got up close and I saw both the good and the difficult stuff going on, and it made a big difference. When I was at Northview Community Church as a pastor in the area of home ministries, we developed a mentoring ministry that we were talking about earlier, and it was all built around, one part of it was built preparing couples for marriage. And you, if you wanted to get married, you had to be attached to a mentoring couple who would have about three couples. You become a small group. You would walk through Norm Wright's material before you say I do. And it would be about 3 months. And then you had to agree, 3 to 4 months, you had to agree that you would be meeting together as a group, as a mentoring group, with a mentoring couple for 18 months after marriage. Because research evidently showed that marriages are going to stay together in a far greater number if you have that mentoring, that model of what takes place. You have the people who live that out. And the results were significant that we experienced from that process. Some quotes that you have written there. You've hurdled the major roadblocks to success when you know the difference. When you know the difference between motion and direction. And a lot of times I think things that we do is a lot of motion in ministry, and sometimes we need to stop, take a step back and think about the direction. And another one, start small, start slow, and start solid in your leadership development. And that's what this experiment was that I'm going to share with you in a moment. That we did. So there's the thought review. Now let's talk about the design of the experiment. And I didn't write it down here. I'm just going to talk it through. The associate pastor I was working with, his name was Henry, and I realized that if we were going to be serious about developing something that had glue to it, that really made a difference, we were going to have to invest in the lives of people and properly train them to be small group leaders. And it would have, the easier thing to do would have been grabbing somebody in the hallway saying, you know what, we've been praying about, and we believe God has called us to talk to you about. And it's really hard for them to argue with God. You know, it's, one must be careful how one approaches things. God gets blamed for an awful lot of things that he really shouldn't be. And that's often the approach that we take. The way to do it, if you want to make sure you got bodies in front of small group leader, small groups and leading them, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be effective at all. And we realized we're just going to have to invest in them. So Henry and I sat down, and we determined that we would like to work with about 9-10 couples at one time. So Henry and his wife, Sandy, and Joanne and I would be giving oversight and working with and developing, more Henry and I, people that we would be saying, come follow me, come follow us. We met with 21 couples. We had we got a list. We said, who am I? We just sat there and said, okay, these people. We screened out people we just knew were not ready at all, because we were going to be very demanding. And we met with every one of the couples, all 21 of them, and we go over coffee in their homes, etc., and we came to the conclusion that there were 9 couples that were ready to be our guinea pigs, if you wish, the first level of doing this. That meant, by the way, saying no to the chairman of the church. And here he made a statement that said to us, we both walked out, I remember going in the car with Henry, and he looked at me and says, what do you think? And I said, no. Here's what the chairman of the board said. He said, guys, if you just lower your standards, I'm willing to come in. And we were saying, actually, we're going to keep raising the standards. So he didn't make it. We chose 9 couples. And we invited them to become part of the process. And they agreed to become part of it. And we met with the 9 couples for just between 6 and 7 months, every week, except
maybe at Christmas, on that week we did. Every week, yes.
Individually or as a group?
No, as a group. We're being a group. Okay, it's a large group, I understand that. But yes, we met. Although we did meet with them individually at times too. But it was majorly to meet with them. Thank you for that clarification. And we had close to 3 hours of training every Sunday morning. Now, the church had two services and time in between, etc. But we spent close to 3 hours every Sunday morning with them. Plus, later in the training, we also involved Thursday evenings. That's a huge investment of time. Huge investment of time. And we had a curriculum. And you may be saying, I'm here for the curriculum. I didn't bring the curriculum because I don't have it written out. But if you ever were to do this, you have the resources that are not hard to get a hold of to do something like this at all. Here are the areas that we trained them in. Okay, the whole issue of teaching and learning. What really is that about? Really? What is teaching and learning about? Okay. A second ministry was caring. What is caring about? What does it look like? How do you do that? A third area was sharing your story. How do you share your story? And built into that, we're talking about being able to share how to have a relationship with Jesus. We literally, they had to prepare a 1 minute and a 5 minute testimony. And we practiced in the classroom together. Okay? So everybody got comfortable sharing their faith with each other. We'd create scenarios where you had to actually have your 1 or your 5 minute, and we actually had a longer testimony. And people got comfortable. I think one of the problems we have, by the way, in training is we actually don't have people practice in a safe environment. So they get comfortable with it. And so we did that. We also have training in the area of relational dynamics. Human relationships is one of the biggest issues. And you heard about that in our open session here with Dan about the issue of trust, which is a big part of human dynamics. Okay, in fact, it's a very foundational factor. And so we had that. We also taught them in basic counseling. We didn't mean that they're going to get a Master of Arts in counseling. We weren't that trained to do that. But we wanted people to understand the basic dynamics of when you walk into a situation that's crisis-oriented or people are working through an issue, how can you be a people helper at that point? Issues such as listening. Issues such as is doing things in the nonverbal manner that tells the person that you are attending them, etc. All that's involved in aspects of counseling so that they felt comfortable in a crisis situation. And then we also taught them about hospital and crisis visitation. Not just in the hospital. We actually took them with us. So that was part of the training. Okay, because sometimes that happens in small group sort of stuff. And in the midst of our training, we started by modeling. And they by observing. And then we would slowly move one or two of them into a position where they would be now helping us and actually doing some of the teaching, doing some of the hospital visiting, leading the way where we were there, okay? So there was a comfort zone in their development. So we took them through this whole process. I mean, we spent hours with them every week. We got to know them. And just an observation, when Henry and I had these nine couples, we sat down and said, okay, which ones are going to be the stars and which ones are we going to really have to massage through the process? And one of the findings, actually I didn't write it into one of my results, I should have, is that in some ways that chart kind of got flipped upside down. Dan was number 9. Dan, we felt, was going to have the most massaging. Dan was only known for singing. I mean, this guy had a great voice. You need somebody to, he's the guy to get up front and sing for you. But he literally cried in the process of meeting with us and telling us, we opened a door that was completely different. Nobody ever thought of him in this area. And he really became virtually the star. I mean, this guy ate it up big time. Unfortunately, we did kind of have a Judas-type person in the thing that we thought was going to do well, and he failed. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So we went through all this training. It built around modeling, built around definite issues that we wanted to work through, built around relational factors. We all got to know each other in depth. And when all this was done, there came a time to appoint them to responsibilities. And so we did it. And I want to share the results of it. And this is where the writing will happen here. Okay. One of the results was that we ended up with leaders who had vision. We didn't ask people to do something without them understanding that there was purpose behind what they were doing. There was vision behind what they were doing. So they had vision. Secondly, we had leaders with commitment. They were willing to die on the hill for this ministry. We had so infected them with passion that we had and that they saw modeled. And there was deep, deep commitment. Well, except for one. We taught them about teaching, and they became competent. I remember that people were astounded when a couple of them, actually had a couple of them teach an adult class on a Sunday morning, and people never thought of them as teachers at all. And they were very competent in their skills. We had people who understood how to share their story, how to enter into that discussion, how to be comfortable with that. Again, all these things took place because we allowed them to experience practicing the process and having models who were there alongside of them. Probably the reality is that one of the weakest spots of, quote, our churches today is that we're really not all that missional. I'm talking about missional outside of the walls. And I just wrote a vision document for the church I'm a transitional pastor of. And I have challenged them to take Don McGavern's acronym. Don McGavern was a writer, a missionary to India years ago, and wrote on church growth movement. He's since gone to be with the Lord. And the acronym is DAWN, D-A-W-N. It stands for Discipling a Whole Nation. And so I took that and I put it into three aspects to address the Acts 1-8. And it's still DAWN 1, 2, and 3. And it's about reaching out. DAWN 1 is discipling a whole neighborhood. DAWN 2 is discipling a whole nation. And DAWN 3 is discipling all world nations. And the idea is going beyond. And how do you do that? I think we need to equip people. Be comfortable sharing your faith. And you know what? Once you learn to do it and you practice it, it becomes more comfortable in actually doing it. Salvation experiences. These people led people to the Lord. I had one man, in fact, he wrote a book and sent me his book since. Not on this, but he worked for banks, and he had to travel the state of Washington. He never picked up hitchhikers ever before. And all of a sudden, he realized, here's an opportunity. So he stopped, he picked up somebody, and they didn't realize they were a target. And, you know, at 60 miles an hour, a person's going to find it hard to step out away from the situation. And he shared. He actually led people to the Lord. We taught them how to, we taught them how to give a 1-minute elevator
sharing your faith. That's brief, right? You may only have a couple floors. And one person actually led somebody to the Lord. Not in the elevator, but from that process. So we had several people come to know the Lord, which was very exciting. Leadership multiplication. One of the things we said to them is that when you step out into small groups, you are responsible to bring somebody alongside, and you are to begin to do what we were doing to you in a smaller manner, and then you are to recommend people to us for the next stage. So we keep multiplying. That took place. Leadership, staying the course. Small group ministry is not easy. It's not that easy. It's a responsibility. It's every week. And people make demands on you, emotionally and otherwise. And there's lots of things taking place in the life of a small group leader. And we had people, they stayed the course. Perfection is not important, but rather serving with our limitations is something that came out from this. We're not looking for perfect people. We're looking for people who are on the journey, who are developed, and who are moving forward and can make a difference. And a lot of people live with insecurities in their own personal lives. And we want them to know, you're released from needing to be perfect. That's not our expectation at all. It's be whom God called you to be. We all have limitations. I have limitations, and it's none of your business what they are. Small group dynamic management. I mean, how do you manage a time together to make it meaningful, purposeful? How do you manage it in such a way that the group doesn't go off? Because after a while, you get very comfortable with each other. And in light of that, it's easy to step outside of kind of the broader direction the small group should be going. 10, leaders with stronger people and relational skills. And you know as well as I, we all have our own unique bents. Some of us just move towards relationships immediately. Others of us are more task than people. Some are more people than task. Some are all people. Some are all task. We all have flavors. And so people were sensitized, these people, in regard to relational skills. Leaders with stronger caring and pastoral skills. Again, this comes down to, in my opinion, Ephesians, we're called to equip the saints. We're not called to do the work and have people observe. And, you know, quite frankly, some people who we led through this leadership development were superior to us in pastoral skills, bedside skills, in a hospital and otherwise. Leaders with greater boldness in decision making. We didn't want them always coming back to us. There's a point where you want them to be able to make direction decisions regarding their group and moving forward. Am I going too fast for you to write those down? Okay, just slow down a little bit. And hopefully those streaming are able to get these down too, so let's not forget that you're trying to get these down. Can I move on? Stronger marriages. That wasn't necessarily our intent, but it was a side product. In this case, they were all couples. I'm not saying couples should lead. Single people can lead small groups, but in this case, they were. And part of that was their observations of Henry's and Sandy's and Joanne's and our relationship as couples. And it's that mentoring, it's that example, it's the issue of rubbing into their skin proper values. The use of or discovery of passion. I mentioned Dan as one. I still have the note from the guy who wrote the book who picked up hitchhikers and worked for the banks at that time.
and he wrote and said, you cannot understand what these 6-7 months, I'm trying to remember how long it was exactly, what this has done to my life. The difference that it has made. And his life is about winning people for Christ. And not the only one of the 9 couples that we took through. More people effectively and pastorally ministered to.
We understand small groups should do that, because that means, like, okay, we got leaders with a small group, you get intimate and you make a difference. Hopefully that happens. But when you've been trained and developed, then you live out that passion and you actually make an even greater difference.
And these people were effective as making the difference in the lives of people. Closing the back door.
You understand what I'm talking about, don't you? People come in the front door and some go out the back door. There are those that are always there. They're the nucleus, they're always there. But you have this, and it was happening with this church. We had a group of people that would leave and a group of people that would come. The people that would come are innocent, don't know. People who are leaving have been informed and have decided this is not their place. Okay, and that literally, I remember literally in the month of January, this is a few months after we had these couples doing this ministry, and our senior pastor, who actually resisted what we were doing, he was resistant to us. Not resistant to having leaders train quickly. He wanted them out there doing it. He just couldn't buy into 6 and 7 months. But in January, two significant things happened. The January before, January is the time when people don't come back after Christmas or back after summer. Those are the kind of two kind of time factors, at least in that church. The church grew in January. And it grew because that new group of people came in and that people who were leaving weren't leaving. Why? Because more people were being ministered to on a very personal level by people who were really well developed in regard to that. So we closed the back door, at least significantly closed the back door. At least it was harder to go out the back door by a long shot. Financial impact was the other one. When I mentioned in January, if I said to you, what are the three hardest months financially for a church? January, July, and August. Okay, usually those are the tougher months, you have the dip, right? The year before in January, they had, the year before when we had this all going, they, you take your budget, divide it by 12, and that's not the wisest way to do it. But the January before, they had less than 60% of income for expenses, okay? And the pastor wanted to put a bulletin insert that was, and we were able to stop him. It was an insert that had the word, help, all over it. And please give. I mean, that's, no, don't do it that way, okay? People follow vision. They don't, they give to vision. They don't give without vision. Well, and so here's vision happening. And the following January, we had 106% of budget. And that's when John, the senior pastor, I could still say, well, maybe what you guys were doing isn't so bad after all.
He was always thinking numbers, and money is numbers, so then it wasn't too bad. But it really made a difference. Impatience of, another result that we had to deal with, impatience of people who were not a part of the process. We had to deal with that. And it was, there were people who attacked us. They didn't see the need for this. And it created a lot of problems, a lot of tensions, because they wanted to know what were we doing behind those closed doors. Well, we explained to them, but they were very suspicious of the process. Another result, not all who enter the process will pass the test. Craig was one. And we met with Craig and his wife and said, you're not ready for leadership responsibility at this level. We want you to go through the process again. Craig became very upset
Craig was an elder. So that the chairman of the elder board was not invited, and Craig just got told you didn't pass.
Tough
card. Yeah. I could tell you more stories about what happened to my life after this. I won't. But it was very difficult. But we had to make decisions. And you know what? Good leadership understands sometimes you got to make tough decisions. They're not always popular. They got to be made. The last one. People rise to a call that has meaning and involves sacrifice far more than just taking on a role without thought and direction. Okay. People rise to a call. People will sacrifice when they see the significance and reason for sacrificing. I know there are those who won't. We talk about today the lack of commitment. You know what? That's true. I get that. I know we deal with that. But the reality is the next generation are actually very committed when they see that it has a cause behind it. They are. They'll give themselves to it. You know, you're going to literally, potentially lose your life over this. People will rise to that. Versus, it's not much, you don't have to worry, you just meet with a group every week, just keep them happy. That's not motivating at all. And I understand the issue. My next message is, talk is on motivation, or partly on motivation. My doctoral dissertation was in motivation in the workplace, in ministry. People rise to something. Raise the bar. Will you have people who resist? Yes. I, in essence, kind of lost my position in light of this experiment. I mean, it moved in the right direction, etc., but it created some tensions with people who were not happy with everything that we were doing. Now, conclusions. Yes.
Can I raise a question?
Yes.
Someone online is asking whether you can go into a bit more detail on 9.6, leadership modification.
Whoops. On number
6, leadership modification. He's asking how was it done and what were the results?
Oh, okay. That's an excellent question. Thank you for that question. Going back to results, and that was people multiplying themselves in leadership development. That's the one?
Yes.
Okay. We placed them in responsibilities in small groups. And part of their responsibility was to infuse people, to minister to other people, to even within the small group. So there's multiplication. Secondly, they were to actually seek out two couples, because, and in this case it happened to be couples, just so you hear. Two couples that they saw as being potentially ready to become small group leaders, and to begin to infuse them with that idea and meet with them separately. And for a period of time, we had this period of time, we asked them to do it, and then based on their evaluation of the couple from that, to recommend them to us to take this to the next, to take those couples into a training like this also. So there, the multiplication happened like that. Okay, so it happened within the small group in regard to you're impacting people. It happened by selecting people, determining, and then recommending them to go through the leadership development, which took place.
He's also asking how were the results?
The results were excellent. Now, not perfect. Not every one of those couples gave us two names, but every couple gave us a minimum of a name, and some gave us two, and some actually gave us more than two. And so the next layer was actually, we ended up breaking it into two groups to work with, two separate time frames, because there are quite a few couples. What also happened, a result from that in leadership development, is that not all the people ended up in small group ministry, but actually, through development, moved into other areas of leadership development, other areas of leadership responsibilities. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'll keep monitoring.
Okay, good.
Okay, thank you.
Can I move on? Yes.
I don't want to press a painful point, but I think, you know, you Pentecost, I think it was actually one of the results.
Say that again?
One of the results was that you paid a price.
We paid a price?
You did.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't want to sort of point, but were there gems that you took away from that experience that might be valuable to us?
From the pain of the...
What happened? It sounded like once there's a really good thing happening. Wait. Were there some gems maybe that you took away from that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened.
Nope. It happened to me twice, so I'm a pro at this. I got you. There are dynamics in any ministry that when you walk into it or you're in it that has the potential of taking apart good things that are happening. One is the issue of suspicion, not being trusted. The lead pastor had the gift of knowledge, incredibly gift of knowledge, but didn't trust us. And even though we explained it every week, we were held in deep suspicion. It was a control issue. And that really factored in, and there were key people around him that had their own personal agendas, and of course he was receptive to that. And even though he saw the results, which he acknowledged that it was going well, he began to realize that he was kind of losing control. And really, if you think about it, when you give ministry away, please, I've equipped you. You're better at pastoral ministry than I am at a hospital visit. You know, you're better at actually leading people to Christ than I am. I can share people, say, well, thanks a lot. A couple of them, it was almost like as non-Christians would cross a pathway, decisions were made. But it was because this whole process brought this out, and it made a difference. So a control issue. It was all built around a person. Like there's a whole story. Like I could write a book. It's beyond that. The more success happening, and then people in the church began to say, the average person in the church were on board with what we were doing. And the accolades started coming. We weren't after accolades. That's not what it was about. And what happened is that we began to get attacked. Okay? And it got really ugly. I would stun you with what actually happened. That's not what the seminar is about, but I'll give you just a piece so you get this. One of the previous associate pastors, before I came, there were three successive months where associate pastors moved on. One man, I won't mention his name, had been there 16, 17 years as an associate pastor. And he was the pastor that loved. That's what he was known for. And the whole time I'm there, I have experienced attack. Because I'm a different paradigm. And we can never pin down where the attack's coming from. Like, we got them. And my ministry came to an unexpected end. And I moved back to Canada. And I'm now involved with Northwest Baptist College Seminary, which is part of ACTS Seminaries. And we got an interesting phone call from a woman who actually was one of the nine couples. And she talked to Joanne. I remember I was in bed, it was Saturday morning, and I kept hearing Joanne say, "What? What? What?" And she came running downstairs, she says, "You're not going to believe this, but that previous associate pastor, whose name I won't give, had moved on to be a lead pastor of a church in the interior of Washington. And he showed up back at this church saying to the elders, whom they loved him. He was such a loved pastor. I have committed sexual moral sin. I'm here to be disciplined. I've resigned from the church. I'm here." And about a week, 2 weeks later, we got another phone call from the same gal saying, okay, there's more to this. So they went before the church and had shared Jim's, whoops, I didn't even give his name, back here, and we're, you know, we're going to be under discipline, etc. The church elect sent some messengers. And they said, Jim didn't share the orientation of his sin, of sexual sin. And he had been practicing that as a pastor at this church the whole time, along being married and having children. Okay? And the elders had actually confided in him and asked him, what would you do with Curtis? And he said, get rid of him. So my ministry ended because of that. So it got ugly, like I said. So, sorry, I'm not sure if that totally fits small group development, leadership development, but I, to unpackage it, there's, that was a very painful thing for me to go through when I realized how my ministry came to a close. But it very much had connections to this, being under suspicion, etc. Okay, can I move on to the conclusions? Here's the conclusion. In the scientific method, you got to come, okay, you do the research, you do the experiment, you do whatever, okay, what are the conclusions? Here's my conclusion. The master plan of evangelism, or as I would call it, leadership development, it works. It really works. I don't mean 100%. It makes a difference. Some will fail the test. Some will fail the test. While the plan works, and the results demonstrate this, it does not mean it works perfectly for everyone. Some will fail the test. That is the price you pay. Thirdly, leadership development makes sense. It makes sense. Going through this process, one of the most exciting moments of my life, when I look back, I realize it just makes sense on a long-term basis. Can I move the computer down, or should I just hold it here for a second? I'm sorry. Yes?
When you say some will fail the test...
I'm talking about Craig.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Question for your conclusions.
Yes.
When you say some will fail the test...
Yes.
Those who failed, was that a competency thing, or was that commitment?
Commitment. In other words, part of it we had some biblical, we had some memorization of certain passages that you could use in counseling situations or in sharing your faith. And next week come, it wasn't long, arduous or anything like that. Craig, I'm pretty busy this week. I didn't have time. Well, you hear that over and over again. There's a pattern. Everybody else had it done. Okay, and it wasn't just memorization of verses, but it was always being late. Oh, I won't be able to make it this time. It was that, like, there was a pattern there, and we said, okay, it's an issue of commitment. Good man, but it was commitment issue. Yeah, good question. Thank you. The question was, you know, was it an issue of competency or commitment? It was the issue of commitment that we said to Craig, next time around, you need to go through it again. Can I move this? Whoops. There are long-term benefits. Conclusion, there are long-term benefits. It takes time. You know, Jesus spent 3 years. Most of his time is with the disciples. I mean, you're starting a world enterprise. And you mean to say you only got 3.5 years to do something, and he spent good 3+ years just majorly with 12 men, and he, of course, wasn't 100% successful. But whose name do we worship here? Okay. Where did that come from? It came from his master plan of infusing and seeing the multiplication process take place. Long-term benefits. Number 5, people will respond to a call that involves purpose and training. People will respond to a call. People will pour themselves out
when there's purpose. I believe our world, I believe a lot of people in our world are looking for meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't dummy down Christianity. We shouldn't dummy down leadership. Anybody can do it. Would you do it? You just basically said you're a nobody. Doesn't matter who does it. You're incompetent. Doesn't matter if you are or not. Just you can do it. And that's dumbing down. And I don't think it should be a high call. And some of the couples are the 21 that we first met. Some of them basically took themselves out when they heard the time commitment that would be involved in it. Relational training is far greater than any other practices. Being with the person makes such a difference. Where they observe you, where they can ask questions, where they see you in practice, makes such a difference. Modeling leadership is far more impacting than any other means of training. Modeling, the short form is, modeling is absolutely superior. It is. And I've gone through seminary and so forth, but some of my best training and development took place on the field. And I appreciated my profs, etc. I mean, I do it so I know it's important. But actually being there and modeling is so critical.
May I ask a question in relation to that?
Yes, you may ask a question, please.
Okay. So, who chooses the mentors? Who chooses the modeling? Because obviously in that situation, sorry to bring that up again.
Yes.
You had a leader there who's supposedly the lead pastor.
Yes.
Here's something great is happening.
Yes.
Falls along the line. Jesus' model first, he would have been more or less a mentor to people, right? Obviously, he had a following.
The lead pastor, you mean?
Yeah, in that situation, that church that
I was in.
Unfortunate thing that happened.
Yes.
What my question then is that how do these people get chosen to be mentors? And that's one thing that I've always, like, I have a mentor myself, a couple.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, what parameters or what qualifications do you look for in these mentors?
You mean the people that we're going to train to be mentors? Is that what you mean?
So these groups, the nine people that you have
yes.
there.
Yes, nine couples.
Those nine couples are actually the people being trained as mentors.
Being trained to become small group leaders and mentors.
Okay. All right. But then obviously
you were the mentor.
You're the mentor.
Yes, we were. We were the, like, Henry and I were, and with our wives, we were the mentors. This was part of the scope of our, part of our responsibilities as we were taking adult ministries in a new direction. And so it was our responsibility to be the mentors. So it was part of our role as pastors that we took seriously. And so we did this experiment. How we chose couples, like we met with them. How did we choose them? We listened to, because we have a series of questions, and we listened to them, and we're listening to openness, passion, commitment, willing to pay a price, their spiritual sensitivity, their spiritual practices themselves in regarding their own spiritual well-being. And the good thing is that Henry and I were together, so we had two sets of ears. And sometimes our wives came, but mostly it was just Henry and I. And we'd go and we'd debrief on every couple. We met with them individually as couples. And it wasn't like yes and no. It was yes, some no, some said no because they weren't ready. And then maybe next time around, they might be somebody that we'll come back to. And that. But we had a series of questions, and then we would debrief on the couples and choosing. So good question.
So, sorry to keep on.
Yes.
My question is that if you have lay people that are respected in church or board members or people, deacons, are they qualified enough then to be the mentors to those couples that you, or does it have to be someone who has been ordained or say,
in our second round? Like, okay, the question is, does it have to be ordained people who do the leadership development, or can be lay people? We took the first run at this ourselves.
The second run involved some of those couples coming in and helping us a bit. And the idea was that we wanted this to perpetuate itself outside of just pastors doing it, still having oversight and being a part of it. That was a long-term basis. I didn't get that far, though, beyond that. Good questions, yes.
The modeling aspect, I'm trying to process it. An awful lot of, wife involvement in their lives, a huge commitment.
Yes.
I'm just trying to process what did modeling look like, because they really didn't get the opportunity to do leading until after they were out of their course time.
No, they actually did it in.
So they were leading a small group while they were going.
No. I'm sorry. Within us, they actually would practice leading within us as a group dynamic. They would each take turns with one of us working with them during the week in preparation for what they might be doing. But no, they were not part of small group leadership at the point of the training. We were moving them towards becoming that. Yes.
You started with 21 couples. You had 9 the first year. The second year, did you also, were you getting diminishing returns, equal returns,
no,
or increasing returns?
Actually, it increased in regard to, and it created a crunch because more couples wanted to have this happen, or more. No, actually, by the way, we had single adults moving into it also, so I shouldn't say just couples. So the first time we chose 9 of the 21. Some said no, and a lot of them we just said, you know, next time around. Then the couples who were now moved into small groups, had gone through this training, began to work with small groups and began to recognize people in their small groups who could be leaders, began working with them, and then made recommendations. And we had more than 9 recommend that were quality, and so we layered it. We had one group we did here first, and then almost halfway or more, about 3/4 way through, then we began another group in that. And some of them didn't go into small groups. They started moving into other areas of ministry in that. But the development was so powerful that it began to get talked about, hey, this is good to good experience.
When you did that, were you rebooting everything, or did you already have groups for running, and this was sort of like, we'll build this new within the existing program?
There were a few small groups already happening, and there was lots of growth happening in the church, and we were able to filter church people into that area that were new to the church. And remember, small groups was actually under Henry because he's the adult pastor, and I worked with him directly. So we could partially reshuffle. Some people were locked into who they were as a group, and we decided we'll let that be for now as we keep moving this movement of new small group leaders moving in, creating new small groups. We increased the number of small groups. That's why the retention took place, because now the relationships are being built with competent people. Question?
Yep.
Yes.
I have 2 questions. One is the 21 couple that you guys met with.
Yes.
Was it like an interview process when you met with him? Like you had a series of questions that you asked
Yes.
him and checked, like, okay, this
yes.
and yes it is, no it is?
Well, it wasn't yes or no, but we would set up and say, you know, John and Mary, would you be open just to sitting down and listen to, we have a vision about ministry regarding adult development ministries and specifically small group ministries, and would you be open just to have us come and chat with you? And we have some questions we want to ask you just to understand where you come from. We want you to ask questions to understand where we're coming from, and we would go to their house and meet with them. And there were some key questions that we'd be asking that weren't yes and no questions. We were interested in talking about the health of their relationship, their spiritual relationship with the Lord, what their passions were with the church and ministry, questions that allowed us to listen to their heart as they spoke. And we walked out, not just like, okay, they answered that question right or that question wrong, although there's an element of that, but it was listening to the heart and listening to the Spirit of God speak to us. And Henry and I were on board with all the couples that we recognized.
Okay.
That was question number one.
So these meetings took place prior to your, I guess, asking them what their commitment, or could they commit to something like this?
Say that again? I'm sorry.
like these meetings
yes.
happen prior to your asking them if they can commit to something.
So, okay, the question and yeah, the question you're asking is when we met with them, we weren't asking them to become involved. We were wanting to understand them and get to know them and that and understand where we were going. Yes, that's the way it was. So we did not say, hey, we're asking you to become a part of. We talked about it, just asked them, we'd like them to pray about it, and we'll come back. And some couples came back and said, you know, right now, our space doesn't allow us to do that. Some couples came back and said, yes, we'd be very open to that. And then we chose 9 couples from the ones that said they'd be open to it.
I just have a question for that. So the 9 couples that you chose went
yes.
through the whole
process. Yes.
The whole process.
Yes.
After the 8 months and they started
yes.
their own groups.
Yes.
And you guys, you said they recommended some couples that you guys can also train.
Yes.
What kind of support did these 9 couples get after that?
From us?
8 months process, because you guys are training a whole new set.
Oh, yeah. No, there was ongoing training. As a small group leader, you had ongoing development that took place that we did. We had annually, we had a getting together with all the groups. We had our super huddle, we had our huddles. I'm using a language in regard to small group things that we do. And so there was always ongoing stuff that took place. Beyond that, it's not like, okay, you got 8 months, you passed, we don't want to ever see you again. Just do it well.
Yeah.
No,
but it's not, these trainings are not as regular as the ones that you went through with them.
It was regular, but not as intense.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the intense training development in those 6, 7, 8 months was much more, 7, 8 months. It was very intense. Now you're on the field. And you were still held accountable as far as your group. We met with you. We had specific times, but we also had another layer of people helping us do that, as far as accountability, etc.
Thank you.
One more. Yes.
I guess the question I have is: this is a large church context.
The church was about 500.
Right.
About 400 and something, 500.
Right, but you're a staff person who is able to be used to
yes.
that level of opportunity.
Yes.
Play this out, if you wouldn't mind, in a smaller church, one staff person situation
yes.
already live,
yes.
moving, and you recognize that you, like my church, for instance, we are 80% of our adults are in small groups, but we recognize that some of our groups, just even though we provided some training, we do coaching, we do monthly meetings, so we're doing some of the things right.
Right.
But there's a whole culture that needs to change in terms of what is required of the leader and some of the skill sets we talked about in here that you have developed.
Right.
How do you take a moving train, as it were,
yeah.
And not shut down your small groups
right.
Because those people still need to be cared for?
Right.
And not overtask the people that are leading those small groups.
Right.
And then reproduce yourself in terms of developmental aspects.
Right.
And get that done. What are some suggestions you feel to break this down into maybe smaller chunks for those of us who maybe live in a different market?
Come back to that quote I had, start small, slow, and solid would be my first point of reference. Rome wasn't built in a day. Your small group new direction isn't going to be done in a day. I think having the big objective in mind, and perhaps I would, I'm going to talk off the top of my head on this one. When I was at Northview Community Church, we had over 100, 150 small groups, something like that, that Frank Martins, who was the overall, and I worked with him. And, of course, the issue of leadership development and getting new leaders. And here's a direction. I brought this up. Frank gave me the green light, but just as he was giving me the green light, the church said, we want you to now focus just on family ministries. Frank, you're not going to have Curtis helping you in small groups. But here's the direction. I had it all set up. We had some really competent small group leaders. And what I said to them, I took a group of them aside, and I met with them and said, would you be open to, in the next year, producing somebody to take over your group from you, to release you. So I wanted five or six couples. And what I'm going to ask you to do, we're going to go through some training together, just sharpening what you're doing. And then I'm going to ask you to become a leader of a small group of people who are going to become, who understand that they're going through a year of leadership development in intense time where they're actually going to become leaders a year later. Okay, so without disrupting what was, other than that we're going to start taking, and you don't need to have that many, you can say, okay, I need two couples, three couples, who are going to work with three or four couples as a small group. But that small group, the whole purpose is to actually train them as a small group to become leaders of a small group a year later. That would be kind of a suggestion I would make. You're not disrupting everything. I don't think you have to take the train off the rails unless it's a disaster. But even if you had one couple who had a vision to be a leader a couple or person, to be leaders of a small group of four or five couples who are going to become leaders of small groups in the future, might be a way of multiplying yourself into some new groups, having more leadership development. I don't know if I've answered your question.
I think you have.
Okay. I've got one last thing. It's 12 o'clock. Can I finish? Implications. And I've had questions all the way through, which is excellent. Implications. We need, no matter the size of church, to develop leaders. So it kind of touches on the question just previously asked. No matter what, we need a model. We need to develop leaders. Secondly, Jesus gave a model that can and should be followed. Because, you know, we hear, well, you know what? People, those disciples, they followed them for 3 years. Okay? So we can't do that. You can't say to somebody, quit your job and follow me for 3 years. But in a way, you can say to people, follow me. Let's go on a journey together. And let's see us develop as leaders. So we can imitate. That's my passion in leadership development, is that we actually multiply ourselves by being models and making a difference that way in the lives of people, so that they make a difference in the lives of people. It doesn't happen by instantaneous stuff. I mean, I love chocolate milk, and I know you pour white milk and put some of that brown stuff in and you mix it, you got instant chocolate. Leaders just don't come out instant leaders. It takes time and effort. And it's painful, and there's always sacrifice. There will always be sacrifice. Got to stop. It's 12 o'clock. It's lunchtime. Thank you for your questions and being involved. Have a good rest of the day.
Yeah.
Any other questions you can ask? Yes.
A couple questions from online.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. The live streaming is asking with new couple leaders brought up, do they get to choose their own group member, or do you assign them to leaders?
We assigned. Assigned them to. We assigned them to. Be a small group leader.
Yeah.
And we didn't say, and this couple will go with you and so forth, although we had some element of that built into it. Yeah.
And one last question is, part of the scientific process involves repeatability of the experiment.
About the which?
Repeatable.
Is it repeatable? Yes.
So have you or someone you know been able to repeat this experiment with similar results?
I can't say yes or no. Jesus did it. And we tried to imitate, and it worked. I think that's why I'm kind of sharing this, is because I think we need to do more of it. Okay. Thank you for the morning. How do you turn that?
I have a question.
Yes.
Well, then we buy the kind of.
Do you know what? I bet you that if you got the name down?
Yeah.
And Robert Coleman? Okay, and the book was originally written in the early
But look how beat up it is. Yeah, it's it's an old book. You might do two things: is go online and see if somebody has it. I mean, like bookstores. Secondly, go on. Who would you go on to look for books that are for sale and look for it?
Yeah, there are lots of.
But you know what? The book may still be available.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a book that's been around a long time. And I know books come and go, but this is kind of like one of the books that has been around for a while. It stayed the course. Some books do. So I would just take the title and the name and see. Now, the original, this was, who was the publishing company here? It's hard to say whether it would be the, I'm sure this company doesn't even exist, but I think if you just type in the title and do a search for it, you probably, The Master Plan of Evangelism by Robert E. Coleman. So, and I suspect you may likely find it. But it's such a simple book to read, because basically he's looking at the eight principles of Jesus that he did.
Very interesting. That's why I'm so I'm eager to
get the book.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope you let me know. I don't think you know. Yeah, I don't know.
Develop your evangelism. And,
it's a solid. It's a very solid book.
Yeah,
and it's very simple. But then that's the point: is that what Jesus did was complicated, but I mean the principles are so there.
Yeah.
And that. So I hope you find the book.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now let's see. How do I